Hello, my name's Dave Emery. In the next two half-hour segments, we're going to be taking a look at some information about the background to what is going on in what used to be Yugoslavia by way of attempting to gain a broader understanding of what has taken place in Kosovo. There are a number of articles that are on a Serbian website that can be located at www.srpska-mreza.com. That's www.srpska-mreza.com. And a lot of these articles come from the American media, and they, I think, cast a very different perspective on what is going on in Kosovo than certainly what we have been hearing here in the United States. The following in particular is a very interesting article from the New York Times of November 1st, 1987. This is from Section 1, Part 1, Page 14, and Column 1. And this article is by David Binder, special to the New York Times. It's datelined Belgrade, Yugoslavia. Bear in mind that this was November 1st, 1987. And it's headlined, "In Yugoslavia, Rising Ethnic Strife Brings Fears of Worse Civil Conflict." And as the heading to this article put on by the people who do this website noted, this is going to strike most people as pro-Serb propaganda. Yet this was written 12 years ago when very few people knew anything about Kosovo, and the New York Times, which a congressional subcommittee found was viewed by the CIA to be its number one propaganda asset, would not appear to have any particular interest in standing up for the Serbs or attacking Albanians, particularly not in November of 1987. And this article is from November 1st of 1987. And it's a very revealing story. Not only does it reveal the excesses about the Kosovars towards the Serb minority in Kosovo, bear in mind that, as we've looked at in past broadcasts, Kosovo had autonomy. It was basically an autonomous region, or the ethnic Albanians had functional autonomy. However, they used that functional autonomy to begin oppressing the local Serbs, at which point Milosevic basically gained the upper hand and withdrew their autonomy, which was an overreaction. But it's interesting that the excesses of the Albanians against the Serb and Slavic minority triggered these hostilities, and those very excesses by the ethnic Albanians, who are not only Muslims, but a group of people who collaborated, first of all, with the Ottoman Empire when that occupied much of what used to be Yugoslavia, and they also collaborated with the Axis in World War II in slaughtering Serbs. The excesses by the Albanian majority in the autonomous province of Kosovo have, in addition to obviously polarizing the political situation there, had much to do with the actual rise of Milosevic. Again, this article 11-187, it's by David Binder, and it reads, "Portions of southern Yugoslavia have reached such a state of ethnic friction that Yugoslavs have begun to talk of the horrifying possibility of, quote, civil war, unquote, in a land that lost one-tenth of its population, or 1.7 million people, in World War II. The current hostilities pit separatist-minded ethnic Albanians against the various Slavic populations of Yugoslavia and occur at all levels of society, from the highest officials to the humblest peasants. A young army conscript of ethnic Albanian origin shot up his barracks, killing four sleeping Slavic bunkmates and wounding six others. The army says it has uncovered hundreds of subversive ethnic Albanian cells in its ranks. Some arsenals have been raided. Ethnic Albanians in the government have manipulated public funds and regulations to take over land belonging to Serbs, and politicians have exchanged vicious insults. Slavic Orthodox churches have been attacked, and flags have been torn down. Wells have been poisoned, and crops burned. Slavic boys have been knifed, and some young ethnic Albanians have been told by their elders to rape Serbian girls." And again, this is from the New York Times. This does not come from a Serbian news service. And bear in mind, this was during the Cold War, and certainly the New York Times is not going to hold a brief for Yugoslavia. So I think this can be taken at face value. Continuing, "Ethnic Albanians comprise the fastest-growing nationality in Yugoslavia and are expected to soon become its third largest after the Serbs and Croats. The goal of the radical nationalists among them," said one in an interview, "is an, quote, ethnic Albania that includes Western Macedonia, southern Montenegro, part of southern Serbia, Kosovo, and Albania itself," unquote. That includes large chunks of the republics that make up the southern half of Yugoslavia. And obviously this would not sit well with the authorities in Belgrade. Continuing. Other ethnic Albanian separatists admit to a vision of a greater Albania governed from Pristina in southern Yugoslavia rather than Tirana, the capital of neighboring Albania. There is no evidence that the hardline communist government in Tirana is giving them material assistance. The principal battleground is the region called Kosovo, a high plateau ringed by mountains that is somewhat smaller than New Jersey. Ethnic Albanians there make up 85% of the population of 1.7 million. The rest are Serbians and Montenegrins. As Slavs flee the protracted violence, Kosovo is becoming what ethnic Albanian nationalists have been demanding for years, and especially strongly since the bloody rioting by ethnic Albanians in Pristina in 1981, an ethnically pure, unquote, Albanian region, a Republic of Kosovo, unquote, in all but name. The violence, a journalist in Kosovo said, is escalating to, quote, the worst in the last 7 years, unquote. Were the ethnic tensions restricted to Kosovo, Yugoslavia's problems with its Albanian nationals might be more manageable. But some Yugoslavs and some ethnic Albanians believe the struggle has spread far beyond Kosovo. Macedonia, a republic to the south with a population of 1.8 million, has a restive ethnic Albanian minority of 350,000. Quote, "We've already lost Western Macedonia to the Albanians," said a member of the Yugoslav Party Presidium, explaining that the ethnic minority had driven the Slavic Macedonians out of the region. Last summer, the authorities in Kosovo said they documented 40 ethnic Albanian attacks on Slavs in 2 months. In the last 2 years, 320 ethnic Albanians have been sentenced for political crimes, nearly half of them characterized as severe. In one incident, Fadil Hoxha, H-O-X-H-A, once the leading politician of ethnic Albanian origin in Yugoslavia, joked at an official dinner in Prizren last year that Serbian women should be used to satisfy potential ethnic Albanian rapists. After his quip was reported this October, Serbian women in Kosovo protested, and Mr. Hoxha was dismissed from the Communist Party. As a precaution, the central authorities dispatched 380 riot police officers to the Kosovo region for the first time in 4 years. Officials in Belgrade view the ethnic Albanian challenge as imperiling the foundations of the multinational experiment called Federal Yugoslavia, which consists of 6 republics and 2 provinces. High-ranking officials have spoken of Lebanonizing their country and have compared its troubles to the strife in Northern Ireland. Borislav Jovic, a member of the Serbian party's presidency, spoke in an interview of the prospect of 2 Albanias, one north and one south, like divided Germany or Korea, and of, quote, quote, practically the breakup of Yugoslavia, unquote. He added, "Time is working against us," unquote. Bear in mind, this is being written in November of 1987, and it's turning out to be rather prophetic. Continuing. The Federal Secretary for National Defense, Fleet Admiral Branko Mamula, M-A-M-U-L-A, told the Army's party organization in September of efforts by ethnic Albanians to subvert the armed forces. Quote, "Between 1981 and 1987, a total of 216 illegal organizations with 1,435 members of Albanian nationality were discovered in the Yugoslav People's Army," unquote, he said. Admiral Mamula said ethnic Albanian subversives had been preparing for, quote, "killing officers and soldiers, poisoning food and water, sabotage, breaking into weapons arsenals, and stealing arms and ammunition, desertion, and causing flagrant nationalist incidents in army units," unquote. Coming 3 weeks after the ethnic Albanian draftee Aziz Kelmendi had slaughtered his Slavic comrades in the barracks at Parasin, the speech struck fear in thousands of families whose sons were about to start their mandatory year of military service. Because the Albanians have had a relatively high birth rate, 1/4 of the Army's 200,000 conscripts this year are ethnic Albanians. Admiral Mamula suggested that 3,792 were potential human time bombs. He said the Army had, quote, "not been provided with details relevant for assessing their behavior," unquote. But a number of Belgrade politicians said they doubted the Yugoslav armed forces would be used to intervene in Kosovo as they were to quell violent rioting in 1981 in Pristina. This turned out to be less than prophetic. Continuing. they reason that the Army leadership is extremely reluctant to become involved in what is, in the first place, a political issue. Ethnic Albanians, note the next sentence, ethnic Albanians, this in 1987, already control almost every phase of life in the autonomous province of Kosovo, including the police, judiciary, civil service, schools, and factories. Non-Albanian visitors almost immediately feel the independence and suspicion of the ethnic Albanian authorities. While 200,000 Serbs and Montenegrins still live in the province, they are scattered and lack cohesion. In the last 7 years, 20,000 of them have fled the province, often leaving behind farmsteads and houses for the safety of the Slavic North. Until September, the majority of the Serbian Communist Party leadership pursued a policy of seeking compromise with the Kosovo party hierarchy under its ethnic Albanian leader, Azim Vlasi. But during a 30-hour session of the Serbian Central Committee in late September, the Serbian party secretary, Slobodan Milosevic, deposed Dragiša Pavlović as head of Belgrade's party organization, the country's largest. This last couple of sentences, because it indicates the extent to which the ethnic Albanians' persecution of the Slavic minority in the autonomous province of Kosovo helped to not only polarize the political situation, but actually helped to bring Milosevic to power. But during a 30-hour session of the Serbian Central Committee in late September, the Serbian party secretary, Slobodan Milosevic, deposed Dragiša Pavlović as head of Belgrade's party organization, the country's largest. Mr. Milosevic accused Mr. Pavlović of being an appeaser who was soft on Albanian radicals. Mr. Milosevic had courted the Serbian backlash vote with speeches in Kosovo itself calling for, quote, the policy of the hard hand, unquote. And That is very, very interesting. This, again, an article by David Binder, of the writing in the New York Times on November 1st, 1987. In Yugoslavia, rising ethnic strife brings fears of worse civil conflict. And still more about what's going on in what used to be Yugoslavia. This, again, an article from the very same website. And this is an article by Lieutenant General Satish Nambiar, retired. That's S-A-T-I-S-H, last name N-A-M-B-I-A-R. And he was the first force commander and head of mission of the UN forces in the former Yugoslavia. And he now serves as the director of the United Services Institute in New Delhi. He's obviously a former general in the Indian Army. This article, again, by Lieutenant General Satish Nambiar is entitled The Fatal Flaws Underlying NATO's Intervention in Yugoslavia. And this is from that same website, www.srpska-mreza.com. This article reads, bear in mind this again from the first military commander of the UN forces in what used to be Yugoslavia, and he was there from March of 92 through March of 1993. And he has a very different perspective on what is taking place in what used to be Yugoslavia. My year-long experience as the force commander and head of mission of the United Nations forces deployed in the former Yugoslavia has given me an understanding of the fatal flaws of U.S. and NATO policies in the troubled region. It was obvious to most people following events in the Balkans since the beginning of the decade, and particularly after the fighting that resulted in the emergence of Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, that Kosovo was a powder keg, unquote, waiting to explode. The West appears to have learned all the wrong lessons from the previous wars and applied it to Kosovo. 1. Portraying the Serbs as evil and everybody else as good was not only counterproductive, but also dishonest. According to my experience, all sides were guilty, but only the Serbs would admit that they were no angels, while the others would insist that they were. With 28,000 forces under me, and with constant contacts with UNHCR and the International Red Cross officials, we did not witness any genocide beyond killings and massacres on all sides that are typical of such conflict conditions. I believe that none of my successors and their forces saw anything on the scale claimed by the media. Again, let me stress, I do not hold a brief for the excesses committed by the Serbs, and they no doubt have committed some. At the same time, their alleged wrongs are being greatly exaggerated, and the wrongs that have been done to them have been covered up completely. And the Serbs, as I've stated in the past and will state again, their excesses notwithstanding, and have certainly been plenty, and I don't excuse them, they are not the aggressors in this conflict, but the victims. Continuing, it was obvious to me that if Slovenians, Croatians, and Bosnians had the right to secede from Yugoslavia, then the Serbs of Croatia and Bosnia had an equal right to secede. The experience of partitions in Ireland and India has not been pleasant, but in the Yugoslavia case, the state had already been taken apart anyway. It made little sense to me that if multi-ethnic Yugoslavia was not tenable, then multi-ethnic Bosnia could be made tenable. The former internal boundaries of Yugoslavia, which had no validity under international law, should have been redrawn when it was taken apart by the West, just as it was in the case of Ireland in 1921 and Punjab and Bengal in India in 1947. Failure to acknowledge this has led to the problem of Kosovo as an integral part of Serbia. 3. It's ironic that the Dayton Agreement on Bosnia was not fundamentally different from the Lisbon Plan drawn up by Portuguese Foreign Minister Coutinho and British Representative Lord Carrington, to which all three sides had agreed before any killings had taken place, or even the Vance Owen Plan, which Karadzic was willing to sign. He, by the way, Karadzic was the Bosnian Serb leader. Continuing, one of the main problems was that there was an unwillingness on the part of the American administration to concede that Serbs had legitimate grievances and rights. I recall State Department official George Kenney turning up like all other American officials, spewing condemnations of the Serbs for aggression and genocide. I offered to give him an escort and to go see for himself that none of what he proclaimed was true. He accepted my offer, and thereafter he made a radical turnaround. Other Americans continued to see and hear what they wanted to see and hear from one side while ignoring the other side. Such behavior does not produce peace, but more conflict. I felt that Yugoslavia was a media-generated tragedy. The Western media sees international crises in black and white, sensationalizing incidents for public consumption. From what I can see now, all Serbs had been driven out of Croatia and the Muslim Croat Federation. I believe almost 850,000 of them. And yet, the focus is on 500,000 Albanians at last count who have been driven out of Kosovo. Western policies have led to an ethnically pure Greater Croatia and an ethnically pure Muslim statelet in Bosnia. Therefore, why not an ethnically pure Serbia? Failure to address these double standards has led to the current one. As I watched the ugly tragedy unfold in the case of Kosovo while visiting the U.S. in early to mid-March in 1999, I could see the same pattern emerging. In my experience with similar situations in India, in such places as Kashmir, Punjab, Assam, and Nagaland, and elsewhere, it is the essential strategy of those ethnic groups who wish to secede to provoke the state authorities. Killings of policemen is usually a standard operating procedure by terrorists, since that usually invites overwhelming state retaliation, just as I am sure it does in the United States. I do not believe the Belgrade government had prior intention of driving out all Albanians from Kosovo. It may have decided to implement Washington's own Krajina plan only if NATO bombed, or these expulsions could be spontaneous acts of revenge and retaliation by Serb forces in the field because of the bombing. The OSCE monitors were not doing too badly, and the Yugoslav government had, after all, indicated its willingness to abide by nearly all the provisions of the Rambouillet Agreement on aspects like ceasefire, greater autonomy to the Albanians, and so on. But they insisted that the status of Kosovo as part of Serbia was not negotiable, and they would not agree to stationing NATO forces on the soil of Yugoslavia. This is precisely what India would have done under the same circumstances. It was the West that proceeded to escalate the situation into the current senseless bombing campaign that smacks more of hurt egos and revenge and retaliation. NATO's massive bombing intended to terrorize Serbia into submission appears no different from the morality of actions of Serb forces in Kosovo. Ultimatums were issued to Yugoslavia that unless the terms of an agreement drawn up at Rambouillet were signed, NATO would undertake bombing. Ultimatums do not constitute diplomacy. They are acts of war. The Albanians of Kosovo who want independence were coaxed and cajoled into putting their signatures to a document motivated with the hope of NATO bombing of Serbs and independence later. With this signature, NATO assumed all the legal and moral authority to undertake military operations against a country that had, at worst, been harsh on its own people. On March 24, 1999, NATO launched attacks with cruise missiles and bombs on Yugoslavia, a sovereign state, a founding member of the United Nations, and the Non-Aligned Movement, and against the people who were at the forefront of the fight against Nazi Germany and other forces during World War II. I consider these current actions unbecoming of great powers. And again, this particular, and skipping down in this story we read, or in this article we read, notwithstanding all that one hears and sees on CNN and BBC and other Western agencies, and in the daily briefings of NATO authorities, the blame for the humanitarian crisis that has arisen cannot be placed at the door of the Yugoslav authorities alone. The responsibility rests mainly at NATO's doors. In fact, if I am to go by my own experience as the first force commander and head of mission of the United Nations forces in the former Yugoslavia from March 1992 to March 1993, handling operations in Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Macedonia, I would say that reports put out in the electronic media are largely responsible for provoking this tragedy. And we've seen examples of that before in the past in some of the other articles and materials that I've reviewed on this program. Another article from that very same website, again, www.srpska-mreza.com, is written by Diana Johnstone, who's done some excellent writing on the subject in Covert Action Quarterly. This article is entitled NATO's Humanitarian Trigger. It's by Diana Johnstone and contains an interesting paragraph. And this will regard to the use of provocations. We have looked at an article in the past in which what was purported in the Western media to be footage of Bosnian Muslims in a Serbian concentration camp, in fact, was taken from inside of a barbed wire area that was set up by the Serbs to protect machinery from vandals, and the alleged inmates of this alleged concentration camp, these Bosnian Muslims, were outside of the barbed wire looking in at the journalists who were filming them from inside the barbed wire. And by the way, that's discussed in a half-hour segment that's available from Spitfire, FTR 148, Truth Dash to Earth. An awful lot of what we have been told about what's taking place in what used to be Yugoslavia is not reality. And in fact, a lot of that has been deliberately skewed by some of the combatants themselves. There have also been a fair number of either provocations or apparent provocations. Skipping down in this Diana Johnstone article, NATO's Humanitarian Trigger, recently Croatian officers have admitted that in 1993 they themselves staged a Serbian bombing, unquote, of the Croatian coastal city of Sibenik, S-I-B-E-N-I-K, for the benefit of Croatian television crews. The former commander of the 113th Croatian Brigade headquarters, Davo Skugor, reacted indignantly. "Why so much fuss?" he complained. Again quoting, "There is no city in Croatia in which such tactical tricks were not used. After all, they are an integral part of strategic planning. That's only one in a series of stratagems we've resorted to during the war," unquote. And another key possible provocation took place in mid-1995, actually in August of 1995, during sensitive negotiations with regard to Bosnia. And NATO was all set to bomb the Serbs. However, they needed an excuse. This article, also by Diana Johnstone, is called "To Use a War." And this is from Covert Action Quarterly's issue of winter of 1999, and that is issue number 66. And research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. And Diana Johnstone writes, "NATO was all prepared." This, by the way, is in August of 95. "However, it," quote, "took an outrageous Bosnian Serb action to trigger Operation Deliberate Force," unquote, recalls Richard Holbrook. This happened right on time. On August 28th, Holbrook arrived in Paris to work out a negotiating position with Izbegovic and his foreign minister, Mohamed Sasser Bey. That day, CNN reported a particularly gruesome bomb massacre in downtown Sarajevo with scores of civilian victims. The timing was perfect. Later that day, at his second meeting with Holbrook, Izbegovic had, quote, "changed into a sort of paramilitary outfit complete with loose khakis, a scarf, and a beret bearing a Bosnian insignia. thus, quote, dressed like an aging left bank revolutionary, unquote, Izetbegović, quote, demanded that NATO launch strikes against the Bosnian Serbs immediately. Sasser Bey went further, saying his president would not see us again until NATO began bombing, unquote. Again, quoting, from Pale, the Bosnian Serbs accused the Bosnian Muslims of staging the incident to draw NATO into the war, unquote, Holbrooke recalls. Within NATO, experts disagreed, and UN Secretary General Boutros-Boutros-Ghali called for an investigation. Quote, none of this mattered much, according to Holbrooke, again quoting, what counted was whether the United States would act decisively and persuade its NATO allies to join in the sort of massive air campaign that we had so often talked about, but never even came close to undertaking, unquote. The opportunity was too good to miss. American, quote, experts, unquote, instantly attributed the massacre to the Serbs. Holbrooke fails to mention that British ammunition experts serving with the UN in Sarajevo said they found no evidence that Bosnian Serbs had fired the lethal mortar round and suspected the Bosnian government army might have been responsible. Whoever was responsible, everything was ready for bombing the Serbs. And in a footnote to that passage, Diana Johnstone writes, experts warned U.S. that the mortar was this from the London Sunday Times, Serbs not guilty of massacre. Experts warned U.S. that mortar was Bosnian. The Times defense correspondent Hugh McManus reported that the British experts said, quote, French analysts who also examined the scene agreed with them, but they were overruled by a senior American officer, and the U.N. issued a statement saying it was beyond any doubt that the Bosnian Serbs were responsible for the blast, in which 37 people were killed and 90 wounded. Quote, the carnage was used as a pretext for NATO's huge air campaign against the Bosnian Serbs, which was followed by extensive battlefield losses and forced the Serbs to the negotiating table. The British experts were in a UN crater analysis team that reached the Chernica market in Sarajevo 40 minutes after the mortar attack on the morning of August 28th, unquote. So there are serious questions about that particular incident, which triggered the NATO and Bosnian and Croatian offensive in August of 1995. More about distortion of the news coming out of what used to be Yugoslavia. This from that same website. This is an article by Marjolina Repo, and it's headlined, The Media and the Demonization of the Serbs. Her last name or his last name is R-E-P-O. And skipping down in this story, we read, in April 1993, on French television, James Harf, the director of the public relations firm Ruder Finn, described his proudest public relations effort as having, quote, managed to put Jewish opinion on our Croatian and Bosnian side, unquote. This firm was hired to demonize the Serbs. This was a sensitive matter, he added, as, quote, the Croatian and Bosnian past was marked by real and cruel anti-Semitism. Tens of thousands of Jews perished in Croatian camps. Our challenge was to reverse this attitude, and we succeeded masterfully. At the beginning of July 1992, New York Newsday came out with the article on Serb camps. We jumped at the opportunity immediately. We outwitted three big Jewish organizations. That was a tremendous coup. When the Jewish organizations entered the game on the side of the Bosnian Muslims, we could promptly equate the Serbs with the Nazis in the public mind. Nobody understood what was happening in Yugoslavia. By a single move, we were able to present a simple story of good guys and bad guys, which would thereafter play itself. We won by targeting the Jewish audience. Almost immediately, there was a clear change of language in the press with the use of words with high emotional content such as ethnic cleansing, concentration camps, etc., which evoke images of Nazi Germany and the gas chambers of Auschwitz, unquote. We're going to continue with an analysis of some of the background and some of the distortions coming out of what used to be Yugoslavia. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.